Call.
This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we have reached Friday. Thanks for joining us here on Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. The Dallas Cowboys back on track. Hey, last night they beat the New Orleans Saints. And they did so with defense. And it was kind of not unexpected, given that Dan Quinn was the head coach. Five assistant coaches were not on the sidelines or within the team due to COVID. Head coach Mike McCarthy out as well. Dan Quinn running that team. Nevertheless, the Cowboys defense came up with four interceptions on a night where Taysom Hill suffered a finger injury and just couldn't really throw the ball all that well. He could run, though. That was one thing we were speculating yesterday, dealing with that foot injury. He did run for over 100 yards and actually looked sort of fast coming out of the pocket. But in the end, the Saints are going in the wrong direction, and the Cowboys righted the ship. Now, I don't know how much of a threat you think Washington is. You know, they beat Tampa Bay. They've had a couple more wins, including beating Seattle. They've won three straight. But there are two games on the schedule for Dallas against Washington in the next three. And so while I said this week, I did not think this was a must-win for the Cowboys at all. I think it's silly to be must-winning games in early December with five games remaining on the schedule. But I think it was a really important win so that they don't get into some sort of backtrack in the division where they can allow a team that feels pretty good about themselves to come up and catch them and beat them. Dallas is incredibly talented. You saw that with CeeDee Lamb last night as he had over, 120 yards of total offense. You saw it with Tony Pollard being able to break a 58-yard touchdown run. Dallas is tremendously talented. And when they're on, they're one of the better teams in the NFL. But when they play in a way that causes them to make mistakes and lose, and you fall back into a division where there's just a hungry team, that's not what you want to do. You want to clear the Washingtons and the Giants and the Philadelphias who are all struggling. You need to clear them. So last night, again, not a must-win by any means, but important enough to separate them. So we'll get more into this game coming up. Plus, something historic last night in the NBA. And we're going to take a look at the SEC championship game as Georgia faces Alabama. And the one key factor that may be in Alabama's favor, and it has nothing to do with what's on the field, but in between the ears. That's coming up as we continue with the Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio.
Listening to Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It's Wake Up Call. Good Friday morning to you. Hope you're getting ready for the weekend. It's a little different, right? Because last week, many of you were getting ready for Thanksgiving week, and maybe you had people coming in, and maybe it was hectic, or maybe you were traveling. And now we're kind of back to just normal weekends. Got college football all day Saturday. Got some tonight with Oregon and Utah. They'll be playing out in Las Vegas in the Pac-12 championship game. And then a full schedule on Saturday. Last night, the Cowboys ended a two-game losing skid. They get to 8-4. They beat the New Orleans Saints 27-17. Taysom Hill, a miserable night. Four interceptions, including a pick six. Had that injured finger that he suffered in the first quarter, but came back and tried to fight his way through that. I thought he ran pretty good. I didn't think he looked like he had a injured foot, or at least if he was talking about pain management, he seemed to be doing pretty well with that. Nevertheless, though, the Saints are really reeling. Remember, they were 5-2 at one point, and since Jameis Winston's injury, they have just not been the same. Hill was 264 yards in the air, did have two touchdowns, including one late in the fourth quarter, but he threw those four picks. He ran for 101 yards on 11 carries. So again, he, 9.2 yards a carry when you combine in the two sacks for minus 12 yards. So he at least he was Taysom Hill-like in their game. But again, it was more important in Dallas's sense to go on the road and beat a team that was down a number of players, including Alvin Kamara. Terron Armstead was out for the Saints. They're just not the same team. And if Dallas were to have lost that game, they would have just been one game ahead of Washington. And while Washington was going to go to Vegas, is going to Vegas this weekend to play the Raiders, man, you just don't want to give anybody in that division that has been struggling this year and, you know, playing good sometimes, not playing good others, to give them any momentum to think that the division, there's a path to winning the division and getting into the playoffs. Dallas is now 8-4. They're 4-2 on the road. They are a team that beats itself sometimes. And if they can fix those kind of things, they're going to be in good shape. As I was saying at the top of the hour, it's a very talented football team. I mean, you can tell. Like, when they're on, they're very good. I mean, Dak Prescott was fine last night. He threw a short touchdown to Michael Gallup. Did have a pick in the game. There was a period of time where they were trading. You notice this in, like, what it was like the fourth quarter. They were trading interceptions back and forth in the game. And then Taysom Hill threw the pick six. But Tony Pollard had a big run. Ezekiel Elliott, who's been struggling with an ankle injury, oh no, knee injury, I should say, 13 carries, just 45 yards. The one thing I will say is this: Dallas did not establish the run. Now, you may say, well, they had 146 yards on the ground, almost like a almost kind of 2-for-1 ratio of passing to running. But remember, of that 146, one of them came on a 33-yard run by CeeDee Lamb, and the other one was a 58-yard run by Tony Pollard. I mean, you take those away, Dallas cannot run the football efficiently. Having a couple of big breaks is not running the ball. It's getting a big opening and taking advantage of it. But it's not having a game plan that is, we are establishing the run and we are pounding it out. So nevertheless, I think that Dallas still has to work on that a bit. But it was kind of entertaining at times to see them play. And CeeDee Lamb was fantastic. 133 total yards of offense, 122 yards of total offense, I should say, with 7 catches for 89 yards. But I think for the Saints, I just don't think they're going to win five straight games to get to 10-7 and be in the running for a postseason. I think this five-game losing skid have knocked them out. And that's not entirely unexpected. I mean, Jameis Winston won the starting job at the beginning of the season, even though we wanted to create it as a battle between him and Taysom Hill. It wasn't really that close. People who really knew the team and been really following the team said it was Jameis's all the way. They played great with him when he was not throwing interceptions. They were winning football games. They were 5-2, and then he goes down, and they just cannot fill that spot. And they can't fill it with a guy. Again, suffered the finger injury, but stayed in the game and just could not lead that team to a win. So that's where the Saints are, and that's where the Cowboys are. Otherwise, it was not a bad Thursday night game. But we will get to the full NFL schedule that is coming up this weekend. We will go through all of the games in hour number 3. Jason Cole is going to join us. We're also going to talk in hour number 2 to Connor O'Gara. We're going to get a preview of the SEC Championship game. That is Saturday afternoon at Mercedes-Benz Stadium between Alabama and Georgia. The Bulldogs at 12-0, and we're going to talk about this in a little later, are going to face an Alabama team that's 11-1. Now, Alabama, how do I put this? There is something about Alabama in these games that really that gives them a mental edge. And you see it almost time and time again. They go to these SEC title games, and sometimes in previous years with Nick Saban, he's gone to these title games where there's been a question mark or two, right? Maybe there's a close win against Auburn, or maybe there's something that can be exploited. And then they show up. They show up in the game. And I think there is a swagger to Alabama that could be on display on Saturday at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. Now, look, Georgia's defense, and we've said this over and over again, is historic. I mean, what they've done this season has been remarkable. They're number one in total defense. They do not give up. They do not give up big plays on the ground. They're second in the nation in pass defense. They've got a pass rush. They'll get to the quarterback. But if you go up against Alabama and you did not play them in the regular season in an SEC schedule, there is nothing there's no team you face that prepares you for that. There's just no team that you face for the preparation of Nick Saban and his team for those kind of moments and those kind of games. Now, Do I believe in like war of words and bulletin board material? Sometimes it does factor in. You hear athletes talk about it, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. You know, when they hear things that other teams say or their fan bases say, and I also think there's the reverse too. I also think that you can inspire your team and fill them with something that makes them go out, you know, not trying to prove somebody wrong, but try to prove somebody right. Okay. So, and I think that's what Nick Saban does with his Alabama teams when they get on these large stages, is that he kind of instills in them, you know, you are Alabama. Let's not kid ourselves here. You are Alabama and you are the best team in college football, right? The way you can phrase that. So that every single player on that team knows when they go out on that field, they're not playing the number one team in the country in Georgia. That they're playing a team that is in their way to yet another national championship that happens to be better than any team that they've faced. Now, can Kirby Smart do the exact same thing? Not really, because he doesn't have that kind of a success where he can instill sort of the, hey, you're Georgia and you've got this championship pedigree. Alabama can do that, right? Alabama can rely on the players that were played on the team last year and the players that, you know, who have experienced or been around other players that have come back to the program to remind them that they are national champions and they are the best team in college football. Georgia doesn't have that ability. They don't have that pedigree. They haven't won a championship in over 40 years, but they can stand on the fact that nobody has been close to beating them outside of Clemson in week one. That after that game, they've dominated everybody they've played, including every single team in the SEC. They just haven't played Alabama. So there's a lot of X's and O's, and there's going to be a lot of analysis. And we're going to talk to Connor O'Gara about that coming up in hour number two. How Georgia can win, how Alabama can win, how Bryce Young can avoid the pressure that's going to come because his offensive line doesn't pass protect very well. How can Georgia score enough if this game does get to a point where Alabama finds a way to score? All of those things. But I do think, and I want to say, I think that there should be some emphasis on the way Nick Saban prepares his team and what he will put into their heads when they go out on that field. It is one thing to say there's a challenge ahead of you that you've got to overcome. There's another thing to instill that you can overcome the challenge because of who you are. I think Saban can do that.
Doesn't this game kind of have like a national championship feel to it?
It does. Right now? Completely, yeah. It really does.
I mean, you could tell me that all the other conferences are having their championships this weekend too, and I wouldn't believe you.
Yeah. But you know what? You know why? Because there, a lot of times we have...
Because it just means more?
Yeah, because it just means more, right. A lot of times in college football, we don't have a real clear number one by a mile like we have in Georgia, right? We have one is Alabama, but there's always somebody behind them that's kind of good.
Right.
And like, but you look at Michigan and you don't feel the way, you don't feel Michigan as strong as a number two as you do anybody else because they just got it. They just got it. They had to win the last game of the season to be the number two team in the country. You don't feel that way about Cincinnati. You don't feel that way about anybody else right behind Georgia. And I said this earlier when we talked to Matt Michelle. The one team I thought could beat Georgia, the one team I thought could give Georgia a handle, a real fit, was Ohio State after what they did to Michigan State. And I know Michigan State's defense wasn't, they can't get to the passer, and I get all that. But I thought if these wide receivers for Ohio State, and they're all next-level pro wide receivers, they're all going to the NFL. So if there's a way for Ryan Day to and that coaching staff to draw up a scheme to somehow be able to move the ball against this Georgia defense, I thought that they could win that game. But now that we won't have them. We won't have them. We're going to have Michigan, and we're going to have Cincinnati, and there might be Oklahoma State. And there's going to be Alabama could be in there too. I mean, Alabama could play them again in the semifinals. But I don't know. I don't know of anybody else that can beat Georgia. The only team I think that can beat Georgia is Alabama. And the only reason I think that is because they're Alabama.
Yeah.
I know.
It's almost like we've been brainwashed.
Yeah. You know, You know, I know the counter argument is going to be, you know, Tony, he was supposed to have that team well prepared against Auburn too. That's the Iron Bowl, and they didn't look that way until the 97-yard drive. I get it, but when you got to remember, he is going to tell his team, guys, you're going to go out there, and you're going to see Georgia fans, and you're going to see our fans, and you're going to see SEC logo everywhere, and you're going to see SEC championship. And you're going to see Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But in reality, that's our house. Because that's where we go at the end of every year. They don't go there every single year. We go there all the time. And I think that's kind of an edge that he has mentally, that he can deliver that Kirby Smart can't. Does it matter? Who knows? You know, I don't know. It's all between the ears, right? But I think he does have that way of being able to say, guys, you're Alabama. Let's go out there and show them what we're about. Whereas Georgia is going to say, that's Alabama. Let's go prove ourselves to everybody that we can beat that team. Whereas Alabama's not saying that. Alabama's not saying, we got to prove to everybody we can beat Georgia. They're like, let's make sure Georgia doesn't beat us because this is what we do. And I think that there's a difference between those two coaching staffs. All right, coming up, history in the NBA last night. Maybe not a good one for one team. We'll tell you what happened as we continue with Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us, and happy Friday to you on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Need gift ideas? The Holiday Gift Guide is something for everyone on your list at prices under $15, like a pair of Mechanics Wear black-coated winter gloves, a Power Torque two-piece magnetic tool holder bar, a Slime digital tire gauge, and much more. Check out the Holiday Gift Guide for great ideas at your local O'Reilly Auto Parts store or O'ReillyAuto.com. O'Reilly Auto Parts, better parts, better prices every day. All right. So last night, the Memphis Grizzlies had fun in their game against the Oklahoma City Thunder. How much fun? Well, they didn't have Ja Morant. That couldn't have been all that great. But, boy, did they have a good time. Because they scored and scored some more.
They had Harlem Globetrotter fun.
Very much so. The final score of last night's game between the Memphis Grizzlies and the Oklahoma City Thunder, 152-79. Now, before you do the math in your head, because I know you guys want to do that, it's a 73-point win, which sets an NBA record. 73 points. Now, Memphis, here is where this game got out of hand. Memphis led after the first quarter 31-16. That's okay. Teams get off to slow starts. It's a 15-point deficit after the first quarter. It's a lot. It's not insurmountable. You make a couple of runs, you can overcome that. But then the Grizzlies outscored the Thunder by 21 points in the second quarter. So now they're really cruising. They had 72 points at halftime. Oh, but they weren't done because they tacked on 80 in the second half. I mean, God bless the Grizzlies for just, I don't know, pouring it on. Just like, why don't we just keep going with this? There was no, I don't know, let's just run down the shot clock and throw something up. They dominated this game, 62% from the floor. That's a new team record. They hit 19 three-pointers. Here was the other key. They had 9 players in double figures in scoring. And the other cool thing about this, they scored 152, and Jaren Jackson had 27. That was the leading scorer. So they didn't even have a guy like score 50 or 60, right? They had 9 guys in double figures. It just a complete domination. Oklahoma City shot 32%. They had 19 turnovers and had no effort whatsoever. None. Just, that was it. There was, Memphis had, they only had 2 steals and 5 blocks in the game. So defensively, just nothing there. And it was quite a whooping. 73 points. You're right. I mean, it's Harlem Globetrotter-esque.
It is. I mean, when you see the score first, you don't, I didn't really put 2 and 2 together when I first saw the score. I was just like, yeah, that's a blowout. I just left it at that. And then he started, I think it was Adrian Wojnarowski's tweet. It's like, it's the largest point deficit in NBA history, like in the modern era. I was like,
yeah, it's actually, it broke a record that was set in like 1991. So it's been around. The record was, it'd been around for a long time. I think it was Cleveland over Miami or Miami over Cleveland or something, whatever it was. But it wasn't like it was recent or like there was there was a 52-point blowout or something like that. I'm never going to say never, but this one's going to stand probably for the rest of my life. I can't imagine a team beating another team by 74. It just takes a special night of nonsense.
It really does. I mean, that just means one team didn't show up at all.
At all.
And it is impressive. I mean, when you see the score and you see that, you know, Memphis was able to put up 150-plus, that, you know, 73 was scored on the other side of the basket. It's like, when was the time?
Yeah, exactly. You're right about the Globetrotters, though. Like, I was expecting a bucket of confetti.
At some point. I'm sure, you know, wasn't there someone sliding around on the court like Curry used
to do?
Yeah, right,
exactly.
And just, you know, still dribbling the ball, but he's just sliding all over the place. Well, they start doing that one passing thing where...
Yeah, where they just pass it around.
They just pass it around.
To sweet Georgia Brown?
Yep.
Yeah, you know what's funny? I have a friend named Gina. I worked with her in Colorado, but she lives in Atlanta now. And she was asked to MC a Harlem Globetrotters game. And she doesn't know very much about sports. So she reached out to me and she was like, what advice would you give me? I've never done sports before. And I go, well, Gina, you're not really doing sports. Like, people who go to Harlem Globetrotter games, like, the reason they have you is because you're a rock DJ and you know how to, like, have fun with the crowd. And that's really all you're doing. Like just comment on the tricks and things like that and just wow the crowd when they, you know, toss the confetti and, you know, all the things that the Globetrotters do. And she was like, oh, okay. I go, yeah, that's all the Globetrotters are. I said, they're fun. They're just a fun group. So I said, y'all have a good time.
It's kind of like wrestling.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, yes, there's some athletics happening, but that's not what you're going there for. I mean, wrestling is literally guy's soap opera.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Exactly. So she was like, oh, okay. I said, yeah, just concentrate on the tricks. I said, you know, because I said, do you know about the Globetrotters? She goes, well, I know what they do. She goes, but, you know, that's not my thing. So, and I said, oh, watch like videos. Like, go online and watch videos and you'll see, you know, what they do. You ever been to a Globetrotters game?
No, I've had opportunities.
They're really fun. I've taken my son twice in Colorado.
I've met a couple.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
Know, I haven't been to one. I mean, one time we did have tickets to go, but I think one of my kids got sick and was like, eh, well.
Yeah, it is kind of a blast, I got to tell you. It is kind of fun. And I shouldn't say, I'm not an expert on every, you know, all of their shows. So I the only thing that was two shows that I went to, the Globetrotters will do tricks and they'll do their thing. And then there's a moment where they play real basketball. So there's a period of time where they're playing real basketball against the Generals, and the Generals can score and they look pretty good and whatnot. And then they do their tricks again. And then they play real basketball and then they do their tricks and stuff like that. So you kind of see both, because it's not a whole game where they're doing their stuff, but it's pretty impressive, man. It's pretty, the Globetrotters were, when they were on like ABC Wild World of Sports when I was a kid, I loved them. I couldn't get enough.
Remember them appearing in Scooby-Doo?
Oh yes. And they had their own cartoon. They had their own cartoon where they were the Super Harlem Globetrotters. And if I'm not mistaken, Curly Neal's head was as big as a basketball. And Geese Autry, his superpower, I can't believe I remember this. Geese Autry's superpower was he was like, he could multiply himself to get from point A to point B. So he could make himself, like he would make 20 of him to jump somewhere or something like that. But yeah, man, they were fun. They were really fun. They threw out their locker like that. That's how they changed into their superhero costumes. I can't believe I remember this. This has got to be from the late 70s. They had a locker. They had this powerful locker that popped up, and they went into the locker and they could cut and they came out as superheroes. That's what they did. Man, they were really popular. But you're right. Globetrotter-esque last night for the Memphis Grizzlies. You know what's funny? The Grizzlies aren't even that good. Like,
no.
They're just like a game or two above 500.
I mean, what if Ja Morant did play?
Right? Would Ja Morant had 40 points?
Or would they have not had 157?
52 points.
152?
Yeah.
You know, Ja Morant played. What if, you know, they might have only had 110?
Yeah, I mean,
we
the
don't
Thunder's,
know.
The Thunder stink, but it wasn't like Golden State beat them by 73, right? It was kind of an average middle of the road Western Conference team that beat them by 73.
Do you think other teams are licking their chops now, waiting like, oh, can't wait for the Thunder to come to town?
Yeah, right.
73, we could beat that.
Yeah, everyone's going to take their shot at the Dump Thunder right now. Mark Dagenaud is the head coach. He's got a lot of work to do to try to get the spirits back up on this team. Oh, God. And they lost back-to-back games to Houston.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsNap Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage. Home loans that fit your life. Rocket can.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're going to start looking at some of the conference championship games coming up on Twitter, at Tony D Radio, at Ron Culver. That's Ron with two N's. Before we do, let me tell you about Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. Industrial strength Freol spreads deep into the rusted or frozen parts, and it frees them with ease. Three-part formula delivering three times more lubricant, so this takes less spray, less torque, and less time than any other penetrating oil to get the job done. If you're like me, you need a little bit more elbow grease as you get older, try Deep Freol Deep Penetrating Oil for all of the jobs that you need, from frozen mufflers and exhaust clamps to exhaust manifold removals, stuck ball joints, axle nut removals, fuel tank removal, you name it. You can get Freol Deep Penetrating Oil at AutoZone, O'Reilly, or Napa Auto Parts stores. It is body shop safe, which means it's safe on paint, plastic parts, and it's silicone free. Again, you're talking about a formula that delivers three times more lubricant, taking less spray, less torque, and less time. Freol Deep Penetrating Oil. All right, so the big one coming up on Saturday, SEC Championship game, and I think this is where this game could really disrupt so much, because if Alabama wins, this is two SEC teams in the title game. Right. And this is two. That means there's going to be only two left. So Michigan and Cincinnati and Oklahoma State and anybody else that wants to jump into the swimming pool here, there's only going to be fighting for two spots. If Alabama loses, and I'm sort of changed my mind on this, I think if Alabama loses, even if they lose a close game, I don't think they're getting in with two losses. I think the pool is just too filled with potential one loss teams that will deserve a spot. And I do think that the committee would really have to sell you Alabama with a narrow, narrow, narrow win against Auburn and a loss to Georgia, even if it was close.
Either that or they'll become exposed as being frauds.
Right, right. And I think they're aware that they better have a very good explanation as to why a two-loss Alabama team is going to take up a spot. Even if that game's 37-36, you know, and Georgia wins it on a field goal or whatever it is. Right? I mean, They really would have to sell a two-loss Alabama team. Whereas if you're one-loss Michigan, one-loss Oklahoma State, undefeated Cincinnati, and one of those teams has to go home, and Notre Dame even with a one-loss, they're going to have to go, hey, what gives here? I mean, Notre Dame could be like, you know, I mean, I liked our schedule, but our only loss came to Cincinnati, a team you apparently like. So
now, that's the other flip side, too. I mean, you know, Notre Dame – essentially, I mean, if all the chips fall the right way and they don't get in, it's because everyone's pointing fingers like, well, you don't have your head coach left.
Yeah, exactly. That's why the reports today are they're finalizing that deal with Marcus Freeman.
Yeah.
I think they were absolutely hurrying up to get this done because they're like, look, you are not holding it against us. You are not holding it against this team that Brian Kelly left. We are keeping the continuity of this team with Marcus Freeman. He is not an interim coach holding the ship together until we convince so-and-so to come join us. No, they are hiring Marcus Freeman because he is going to be the new head coach, and they are looking at the committee going, ha-ha, now tell us we're missing a part. All our kids are staying. Our coaches are staying. This guy is running this defense. He's still here. Now you tell us why we don't belong because we're missing Brian Kelly.
Yep.
And, you know, good for Notre Dame because they're hiring a guy everybody likes. I can't stress this enough. The praise he's gotten in the last couple of days, it makes me jealous. Like, I don't think people would say that about me in death. You know how you say nice things to people when they die?
Yeah.
I don't think people will say those nice things about me when I'm dead. What Marcus Freeman's getting.
Oh, come on. We'll talk about you when you're dead.
I know. Well, there you go. You said we'll talk about you. Oh, God. I'll be talked about like those two people talked about Scrooge in A Christmas Carol. Like the guy comes home and goes, is he really dead? Yes, he is. We don't have to pay our debts anymore. Marcus Freeman is well loved. That's my original point. Well loved. And I'm glad he's getting the job because I think Notre Dame really, really needed to make a statement that we're not messing around.
No,
it's an 11-1 team.
I mean, it is a risky move because, what,
of course.
He's 30-something?
35 years old.
I mean, it's a risk to take someone that young, but, you know, I mean, well, he has a proven record already.
Yeah, sure.
So why not give him a chance?
And why not? You know what? Lincoln Riley was 33 when he got the head coaching job. What? How old was Lane Kiffin when he was at Tennessee to USC?
18.
Mid-30s? Yeah, right, 18. Right? I mean, it's enough with the age thing. I think that he has
If you know what you're doing, you're fine.
If you know what you're doing, you're fine. You're fine. And, you know, I think we are getting more and more away from this idea that you need 15 years experience to take a job like Notre Dame.
Can't be a head coach till your 60s.
That's right. All right, so what about the SEC title game? How do you think it's going to go? This Georgia defense, as I said, very, very, very good. One of the best defenses you'll see in college football, forget this year or of any year. However, Alabama does have Bryce Young. And if Nick Saban knows my offensive line can't protect at all, he is going to try to devise an offensive scheme that is going to be able to utilize Bryce Young in a different way. He's extremely talented. Remember, preseason Heisman favorite, Bryce Young. But I just think this Georgia defense is too strong. But I don't think Georgia is running away with this.
I don't either.
I just don't.
I mean, you know, on the one hand, we could potentially see a blowout by the Georgia side, just, you know, them stifling Alabama all night long. But Nick Saban has been here too many times to be stifled by anything.
Right.
And I think that's the X factor. I think, you know, you said it earlier where, you know, it's how Nick Saban prepares his teams for moments like this. He's the X factor in this game.
Without question. Yeah.
You know, and because he knows how to prepare for a game. I mean, we know as well as anybody that he's just sitting there watching film after film after film, breaking down every single play and finding their tendencies that he's going to be able to exploit.
You know, I'd have to do some real digging into the history books, but I can't remember the last time Nick Saban has walked into a game like this. Major bowl game, SEC championship game, big time SEC matchup during the regular season. I can't remember the last time he was an underdog.
Yeah. It's been a while.
It's been a while. Now, somewhere along the line, I'm sure it happens, and I'd have to do some digging. But off the top of my head, I can't remember one. I'm trying to think if he was an underdog when they faced Florida in 2009. I'm trying to remember if he was an underdog then, because Tim Tebow and the Gators were really good. But I don't think they were. I don't think they were at all. I think they were the favorites, because they ended up winning that game. But nevertheless, I can't remember a time where, you know, there was a mountain to climb for Nick Saban in Alabama. But this Georgia defense could do just that. The question I got is this. One question we don't really talk about with Georgia is this. Is Stetson Bennett ready for this moment? Right? I mean, we kind of figure Bryce Young is, even though we have really nothing to back that up with. Is Stetson Bennett ready to do this?
We assume Bryce Young is ready for the moment because Alabama is always ready for the moment.
Right, and
Alabama
right.
is always in this moment.
Yeah, good point.
So, you go down the list of name any one of their players, we're like, oh, they're ready for the big game, even though they've never been here.
You could have asked the same thing about Mac Jones, right?
Yes.
Even though Mac Jones came in to fill in for Tua Tagovailoa, they weren't a national championship team that year. But that might have been the last time Nick Saban was an underdog when he faced LSU, remember?
Yeah.
When LSU came to Tuscaloosa? And they were that good? Maybe. But when Tua was hurt and Jones replaced him that season, all right, they weren't going to the SEC championship game. They weren't competing for the national title. So, yeah, but when he did take over the team, they won a national championship. Other quarterbacks in Alabama history have done the exact same thing, taken over the job and led a team to an unbeaten record or an SEC title or a national championship, whatever it may be. So we expect Bryce Young to do that. We haven't really figured out can Stetson Bennett lead a team. He's done a great job this year, but can he do it against – if Alabama goes mano a mano with this team, right, we'll match you. We can find a way to get through this defense and match you. And Stetson Bennett has to play one-on-one against Bryce Young. We've never really dissected whether that's a possibility. I mean, Georgia's run game may have to get going. There might be a number of things Georgia does, but we'll know in the first couple, you know, series – well, I don't know. I don't want to say that Nick Saban can make adjustments. So if Georgia is shutting down Alabama consistently early in the game, there might be an adjustment or two like we saw him do it against Auburn where he finally was like, I got to get that second half. They shut Auburn down and then went on that big drive. Right. So there was a mentality change coming out into the second half. That may be what Saban is going to have to do. If you start noticing that the trend is Georgia is winning the game in the trenches, which is probably going to happen because Alabama's offensive line just has not been that good. And Georgia can get to the quarterback. So I'm very curious to where this goes. I just don't right now. The line is Georgia 6.5. I think this is going to be close. I think it's going to be close, but comfortable. Does that make sense? Where the score is going to be within a feeling like it, like Alabama could have won the game, but you're never going to feel like they could win the game.
Yeah.
Like it's going to be like that. Like Georgia's not going to blow them out, but they're not going to be panicking either. I think that's what you'll see. But I can't wait for this one. I can't wait.
It's funny. There's a conference championship tonight. There's others on Saturday. They all just feel like appetizers.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, even if you missed it, you're going to feel okay about it.
Well, you got Oregon and Utah tonight, and that could have really meant something. Except Utah blew it by... Well, they didn't blow it themselves, but they blew it for us by beating Oregon by 31 points the last time they played them. And that went, okay, wamp, 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 bye-bye, Pac-12.
Right.
Right? I mean, there was Oregon, right? There was Oregon sitting on a pedestal. Like, you used to pick on this conference. You know, you've shoved it to this conference many times, but we beat Ohio State. And all of you are fawning about how great Ohio State is and how they bounced back by losing to us. And then they lost to Utah, and that's all you need because they had lost to Stanford earlier this season. So that was their second loss, and that was it. So that's your game tonight for the Pac-12. That's a team that's, you know, no one from the conference is going to the playoff. But then you've got Oklahoma State facing Baylor, and that's the early game on Saturday. Then you've got Alabama, Georgia at 3 Eastern time, or is that 4 Eastern time? Whatever, mid-afternoon. You got Michigan and Iowa. You've got Houston and Cincinnati. The nightcap is going to be Wake Forest and Pitt. Yay. Kenny Pinkett, though, you get to see him. And, people love him. So you get to see him. But I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Houston-Cincinnati game is going to be going on at about the same time the Alabama game is. It's like staggered start. So Alabama and Georgia will be going on, and I think Houston and Cincinnati will be getting underway. So Cincinnati, I don't want to say they'll know because sometimes you hide this from the team, but there's probably no way they won't know. They'll know if Alabama wins that game, and there's only 2 spots. If Alabama wins that game, they're going to need a lot to happen for them. Well, they'll know if Oklahoma State won, so and then they'll know get a feeling for Michigan, Iowa, that will actually be later on the night, I think. So, you know, if Alabama wins, it's going to cause a lot of heartburn for some teams.
Yeah.
Yeah, except for Greg Sankey. He's just going to sit back and smoke a cigar and drink some tea.
It'll be passing him out as if he just gave birth to a child.
Exactly. Laughing at everybody who, you know.
And go ahead, put it to, you know, increase it. Doesn't matter. If you increase it to 6, that means we'll just put 3 teams in. If you increase it to 8, we'll put 4 teams in.
Yeah, exactly.
SEC will always have half the number of teams in the college football playoff.
All right. Coming up next, Michael on Twitter has got my answer to when the last time Alabama was an underdog in a big game. We got that for you next on Sports Map Radio.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Rocket Mortgage.
Live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, this hour of Wake Up Call presented by Rocket Mortgage. Need a mortgage that fits your life? Rocket can. All right, so I asked the question, when was the last time Nick Saban was an underdog in a major game? Pretty much any game, because every game they play is, you know, major. Michael has the answer on Twitter. Alabama was a 1-point underdog in 2015 against Georgia at Georgia. Bama routed Georgia 38-10, by the way, in that game. They also were a 5-point dog against Tebow and the Gators in the 2009 SEC title game. That's the one I was thinking of. That's the one where I thought Alabama was just a touch back of where what the perception was of Florida and Tebow that particular season. So I think that was Tim's senior year, and Gators were pretty good that season. So, yeah, that was it, you know. Dan Wolken was asked on Twitter, by the way, our good friend Dan Wolken, who gets off the phone quickly every time we interview him, that Dan Wolken, in case you forgot, he was asked, when was the last time Alabama was had a no one believes in us game? And Dan's response was the 2010 game against Auburn. That was Cam Newton, where they were, you know, maybe they were, you know, that was a year later after they won the SEC championship game against Tebow and the Gators and won the national title, too. They went to Pasadena and beat Texas that year. But the next year that Cam Newton was playing for Auburn, they won the national title. So there you have it. It's hard to really remember the last time an Alabama team was a dog going into a game, or a team that you were like, I don't know if they'll win. You always get the feeling that Nick Saban's teams are going to win. And that's why I'm looking forward to this game, because there's a couple of outcomes that can happen here, right? Georgia can win by a lot. Alabama can upset them. Alabama could lose a close game, right? And all three, they have some ramifications here the way we think about college football. If Georgia routes Alabama, name me another team that is going to give them problems in the playoff in 60 minutes of football. I mean, if they really rout Alabama, I mean, if it is 38-10, right? Like, you know, like we saw, like Michael pointed out before, if it is that kind of score, then show me Michigan, Cincinnati, anybody else. If Alabama wins, then you got two teams in the SEC, and the SEC once again goes, ha-ha, no one can beat us. And if Alabama loses a close game, I don't think they'll get into the playoff. But there might be a blueprint for somebody to go, well, that's how you can do it. If we can get skilled guys to do that, there might be an opening. All right, those are the three things that can happen in the SEC title game coming up on Saturday. Coming up, the good, the bad, and the dumb, and then we're going to talk to Connor O'Gara about that game and about the SEC in general, and also we'll continue to look at other games.